Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. It is open mic, and before he announced he was running for governor, Charlie Baker would join us every Tuesday this time. Now that he's had a vacated slot, we are inviting all the Democratic gubernatorial candidates to join us, which, frankly, could take years based upon the... In any case, last week we spoke with Juliette Kayyem. Today we're joined by Don Berwick. He's a physician, health policy expert. He ran the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services for Barack Obama. Dr. Berwick, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You know, earlier today we were talking about this terrible shooting down in Washington, D.C., and we have very tough gun laws already in Massachusetts, but there was another hearing. There were hearings up in Beacon Hill last week. A couple of the parents who lost children in Newtown were there testifying. Do you think we need stricter gun laws in Massachusetts? If you were governor, would you be pushing for stricter laws here?
Yes, we do, and yes, I would. It's largely a federal issue, but in my opinion, we can't push hard enough. I have respect for purely recreational gun use, but I've seen too many kids injured, and it's time to really, really solve this problem. And America wants to solve it. We know what the public thinks, and I would push very hard.
What do you think we need in Massachusetts?
We need more background checks, registration, I think, and basically making the problem much more visible to the public so they understand and can support more aggressive legislation.
But you mentioned what we were talking about earlier this morning as well, is that without uniform federal legislation, you just go to New Hampshire, as Marjorie did for a column she wrote in the Boston Herald. So aren't we almost giving the public this false sense of security when we fight for strong – we already have some of the strongest laws in the state – in the country here already, as is.
Yeah, we have to fight on both fronts. After I served in D.C., I saw the paralysis and the nonsense going on down there. This is currently a political environment that isn't even listening to the American public. We really need to fight for that on a national scale. But I want Massachusetts to be a beacon. I think this state, in every domain of progressive legislation and public policy, should be showing the country what's necessary and what's possible. And we have a contribution to make by doing that here.
So we're talking with Don Berwick. He's one of several Democrats running for the nomination to be the next governor of the – to win the Democratic primary and become the next governor of the Commonwealth. You're a physician. We haven't had physicians. I think it's been like 200 years since we've had a governor
right.
who's a physician.
Is that so?
You're going to turn the tide here, Dr. Berwick. Why would a physician make a good chief executive of the Commonwealth?
Well, first, let me say that my background is – I'm a physician, but my career really, really has been spent more broadly on improvement. I've been working on improving large systems, healthcare, and other systems, public health, working with governments all over the world through the Institute for Healthcare Improvement. And indeed, when President Obama asked me to run Medicare and Medicaid, I went down there as a doctor, but I ran a $820 billion agency, the largest one in government with 5,000 employees. So my experience is broad. But, you know, I've been thinking on the campaign trail a little bit. I've been enjoying it so much. And part of it is I think it's listening. I think people want to be heard. And every living room I've been in, people have things they really want government to open their ears and listen to what people are concerned about. Of course, that's part of my skill base. I'm trained as a good doctor. The first thing you do is don't talk.
I want to hear what you I could learn that too. I want to hear what you have what you heard on this listening tour, because I spoke to you in January and you said we're going to do that before you declared in June. But we should fill in the blanks for people. You were a recess appointment of Barack Obama, and ultimately you stepped down. Why didn't you get the job?
Yeah, well, the Republicans mobilized against me.
Why?
I think symbolically for the president, Glenn Beck called me the second most dangerous man in America.
Who was first, Barack Obama?
Yeah. Actually, Cass Sunstein.
Another is that so?
And, I had to fight hard. I fought Mitch Daniels when he was trying to restrict reproductive rights and defund Planned Parenthood in Indiana. It was a very, very... very tough environment.
Their line, though, was they were against you because of the infamous R word, that you were in favor of rationing, and they trumpeted a quote of yours. You guilty as charged?
It was hogwash. I mean, what they would do is take – I mean, I've written over 200 papers, and they would take three-word phrases out of context. No, for rationing, I'm against rationing. I went to the mat for kids as a doctor time after time to get them everything they want and needed. And I know in this country we don't have to ration care. We just have to make it serve people.
But, you know, you hear this argument all the time when we talk about how much money is spent, and you would know far better than I in the last few weeks of life that – you know, grandma is 89 and the kids are all in a fight about should we keep reviving her, should we let her go, that we do spend an awful lot of our money at the back end instead of on the front end.
It's all about choice and power. We know what people want in their final days. There are great research on it. They want to be with their loved ones. They want to be home. They want to have their pain controlled. They want to live as long as they can, but they want dignity and respect and comfort. Instead, we put them in intensive care units, hook them with the machines they don't want and the doctors don't even want to use. We have it's a big area of overuse in America. By the way, my position is if you want to be hooked up to an intensive care machine in your last few days, it's your choice too.
Even if taxpayers are funding.
Absolutely. We can afford that in America because most people don't want that.
We had a ballot question in Massachusetts that would allow people to take their own assisted suicide. They didn't like that word,
death
but that's
dignity,
what it was.
Death
with
it,
dignity was what the side that proposed it was. The woman that used to be Marcia Angel used to be – she's still a physician and was at the New England Journal of Medicine. She was a big proponent of that after her own father's terrible experience. What's wrong with that?
I think it's the wrong conversation to have, really. We know that when in a properly supplied and properly guided medical care system that is very respectful of people, people have choices and we can have superb end-of-life care. We've shown, for example, that people enter proper hospice care as opposed to those who don't. The ones who actually enter end-of-life care live longer than the ones who don't. I think that's the conversation to have.
So you voted no on that question?
I don't I'm ambivalent about that question. In the end, I really do believe people ought to have choices. But I think we can do away with that question by having proper end-of-life care.
How'd you vote,
throughout
though?
The state?
You had to vote. I assume you voted. Did you vote?
I voted on that ballot question. I voted against that ballot question for that reason, yes.
We're talking to Dr. Don Berwick, former head of Medicaid and Medicare for the President of the United States, now running for the Democratic nomination for governor. Give us a 15-second review of Deval Patrick's 7 years in office.
Magnificent achievement. I think the best governor in America. That's my opinion of Governor Patrick. He's done a great job. We have the most progressive energy policy, I think, in the country, except maybe for California. We're trying to execute, and he's done pretty well on the health care reform that we need. He's helped us a lot with education. He's got a great track record.
So let me ask you about a couple of his policies, particularly in the health sphere. We were just talking to Marion Nestle, who you probably know, Eat, Drink, and Vote, obviously a huge nutritionist and beyond. One of the controversies on the public health front is under Deval Patrick, parents get these letters from school nurses or whomever saying that your kid's BMI is X, he or she is in the certain percentile, you got to do something. There was a huge uproar with a lot of parents saying, again, as I said to her, this is none of your business. We'll worry about this and it embarrasses our kid. Is it a good policy?
I think it's a good policy. We need to combine that kind of information with plenty of education. But, you know, the obesity epidemic in this country and in this state, it's massive. People are headed for lives of severe disability and terrible problems, including problems of self-image and even school performance. So I think I want to turn the lights on, and I think people need information about them and their children's health.
Was Bloomberg right on the soda front?
I think he might have overreached a little bit on that. I tend to want to preserve choice. My formula is all the information possible and all the choice possible, and that, I think that's the proper way to approach it.
One other thing on the healthcare front, and since you worked for Barack Obama and you have high praise for the current governor, Barack Obama unilaterally, some people think illegally, postponed the employer mandate on Obamacare for a year. In anticipation of it going into place before the postponement, Deval Patrick agreed to get rid of the employer mandate here in Massachusetts, where if you don't provide it under the state law, there's a penalty. Even after, we discussed this with him too, even after the president said, no, I'm going to put that on hold, the governor said, I'm going to go ahead with it anyway. So essentially, we have gotten rid of, on the federal, what was the common, on the state, what existed, any penalty for employers who don't choose to provide health care for their employees. Did Deval Patrick make the right move?
Let me zoom out for a second. We need healthcare to change. We need it in this state, in this country. It's far too expensive and it's not serving people well. We're 23rd in infant mortality. We're 40th in life expectancy. We have a healthcare system that isn't doing the right thing and we need big changes. And the biggest change is we need to make it a human right in America. We're the only Western democracy that hasn't done that. So the overall big picture, we're on a majestic course that we've got to continue on. And the state that I want to be governor of led the whole nation in 2006. I'm very proud of that. The details of implementation are very, very difficult. In my opinion, the mandates are necessary. They're certainly necessary in the long run, if not in the short run, because without the mandate, you get people who just they will stay out of the system till they need the care, and then you unwind the whole idea of insurance. Everyone's got to be in. Everyone needs to participate.
We're talking with Don Berwick, a physician and health policy expert who ran the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services for President Obama. So should we have a Medicare-type service instead of Obamacare? Would that be better than what we're going to get?
Well, that's a difficult question. I mean, Medicare, which I ran after all, the president picked me to run Medicare,
exactly.
Medicaid, and I was the person responsible for implementing 70% of Obamacare. We need healthcare as a human right in America. Okay, Medicare does that. We passed in 1965 legislation that covers all elders. We have a Medicaid system that badly needs support for people who with disabilities and who are impoverished. I think we need to move in that direction. Right now, the country has chosen a mixed public-private financing system. That's what happened with Obamacare. Instead of expanding Medicare, which we could have done, it was judged to be politically not viable, and so we made a deal with the insurers to participate in this expansion. Whether that works is a big national experiment, and we need to watch it closely.
You may be the wrong person to ask this in light of the fact that you didn't become the permanent head of the center because of Republican opposition. We have 32 Republicans as of the date of the resignation of Dan Winslow at the end of the month on Beacon Hill out of 200 legislators. Is that a problem for small D democracy that essentially, if you're elected or one of your fellow Democrats is elected, we have total one-party rule in Massachusetts? Should that trouble voters?
I don't think so. The Democratic Party in Massachusetts is a very diverse party. It's a big tent. There are lots of points of view under it and lots of diversity. And I think people can trust this party to take public policy forward and to have really good debate. And I'm worried about the Republicans. I think if you see what's going on in D.C. and the kind of I think it's nonsense that the Republican Party is foisting on with misinformation and really forgetting that they serve people. I don't want that.
But there's one
state.
Republican here. I mean, do you Charlie Baker, who is likely the Republican nominee who you'd face if you got the Democratic nomination, has while he's been criticized on a number of fronts, virtually everybody gives him rave reviews for pulling Harvard Pilgrim out of virtual bankruptcy and into the one of the most well received by consumer healthcare plans in the country. That's quite a major achievement, isn't it?
He's a friend, a good businessman, and he ran an insurance company, healthcare insurance company, well. But the voters rejected Charlie in 2010. He's going to have to come back and make a case that something's different now. And he is tied to the Republican Party, and that's the party right now that's hurting our poverty programs. It's fighting against gun control. It's doing things that are not consistent with a progressive agenda. And I think that's the agenda this state wants.
Of course, a lot of people say Democrats, with their strong ties to particularly the teachers' union, have been doing a lot to undermine improvements in schools, particularly for poor kids. If you were the governor, Don Berwick, what would you – are you for merit pay for teachers? Are you for expanding charter schools, particularly in the Bostons and the Lawrences and the Lowells, where they are really in desperate straits? Even though Massachusetts, as Jim always wants to point out, does better than a lot of other states school-wise, we are still struggling.
No, best in the country, actually.
We're still struggling.
Number one in these standardized tests.
Yeah, but we're lagging behind many other countries. Anyway, what do you think about merit pay and charter schools?
Well, first, let me put education dead center. It's the keystone issue in our state for our economic future, for morality in government, for justice in our society. It's really important. And kids are crucial to me. We ought to be proud of what we've done. I think I read that if we were a country, we'd be second to Singapore now, mm-hmm. in our elementary and secondary science and technology education. Very proud of that. But we're leaving far too many people behind. There are kids who just are not making it. Our early childhood preparation is not preparing kids who need it for school. And I'm very, very worried about our state-supported higher education. More people in Massachusetts use state higher education than private higher education. And I think it's the on-ramp to economic development and personal success and mobility. So I would invest heavily in the community college system. It's really crucial. With respect to teachers, the most important thing with teachers is respect. My view of leadership is you enlist the workforce to take the hill together. And my whole approach at CMS and prior to that in my work at IHI, it's to reach out to people and say, I know you want to do a good job. I want you to do it. I want to take away obstacles and help you grow and develop. I'm worried about systems that treat employees with carrot and stick mentality. And I want to work with the teachers of Massachusetts to develop them into the proudest profession in our state. That would be my agenda.
But, you know, right now you have all sorts of parents that confront a poor teacher like in the third grade or a poor teacher in the fifth grade. They don't have the money to hire tutors. They don't have the money to move to Wellesley. Their children are really struggling. So what do you do about that?
I want to get their backs. I think this is a country that is facing a moral test. Will we go back and help the people who really need the help, including the parents and the kids you're talking about? That commitment has weakened in the nation for reasons that I find sad and that I don't accept. They cannot weaken in this state. We have to have everybody lined up behind those kids. That does include giving them choices. I think parents have a right to really protect their kids and their kids' futures, and I want to work with them.
So you're okay with more charter schools?
It depends on the subtleties of it. The most important, yes, I think charter schools are okay. I would work with the unions to make them more acceptable. The most important thing about a charter school, whether it's in district or independent, is that it's an experiment. It's a way to learn so we can take those lessons and bring them into the mainstream. That's what I did in healthcare for 30 years.
Speaking of education, Deval Patrick proposed $2 billion in taxes to fund both transportation infrastructure work and major advances in education. He got maybe in the neighborhood of $500 million. That's a debatable notion, and virtually none of what he was looking for in education. Would you have supported that $2 billion tax package?
I would have. I don't know what went wrong in the conversations between the governor and the legislature, but I know inclusiveness and dialogue really matter. But you look at the state of our transportation system right now, it is really nearly disastrous. The average railroad engine in Massachusetts is 22 years old. You own 5,000 of them if you're a taxpayer here. The average lifespan of a railroad engine is 20 years. Now, give me a break. You change the oil in your car, we're going to have to get this system back up on its feet. And everywhere I go in the state, people want transportation to be reliable. It's about their futures.
Yeah, but the voter says to you, Don Burke, I agree with everything you say about those needs, but I'm barely getting by. I'm working 2.5 jobs. I can't afford my income tax to go up. What do you say to that man or woman?
I say I want people who have more means to contribute more and people who are hovering at the edge to have relief. And so I think progressivity in the way we approach the financing is really, really crucial.
So you'd support a change in the state constitution or allow for graduating?
I would. I don't know whether it's feasible to get there, but we need progressive taxation. It is not fair to ask people making $30,000 a year for their family to kick in as a proportionate amount as much as a wealthy person does.
Last question from me, and probably the most difficult one I think you're going to face in this whole campaign situation. Barney Frank was your tutor at Harvard. Is that correct?
You know that? That's absolutely.
How long did it take you to recover from that experience, Don Berwick? That's what we want to know. What was that like?
I must say, I remember the housemaster who oversaw us both. He pulled me aside one day. He said, of all the people you've met, as a college student, you'll be proudest to have known Barney, and I have often felt that this is
really
a terrific leader.
Yeah. He didn't yell at you when you were...
Of course he yelled. He yelled at everybody. Equal opportunity yelling.
Oh, okay.
What a wonderful
guy.
Well,
that makes me feel better, because all you ever
You're
do is
alone.
Yell at me.
Hey, Don Berwick, good luck. It's great to see you. I'm sure we'll see you a lot over the next year.
Yeah, thank you very much for being with us, Don. Don is a physician and Don Berwick, a physician and health policy expert who ran the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services for President Obama. He is running for governor on the Democratic ticket. Thanks so much for joining us.
It was my pleasure. Thank
See you soon, Doctor.
We come back. We're going to look at a nation that has been overlooked in recent weeks because we have been so focused on the civil war in Syria. Charlie Sennett and his new Frontline documentary on Egypt is up next. That's 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.